the winning sound of Network Sports.
Very pleasant good evening to you and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Well, it's CPL, yes, the Knight Riders, of course, in battle earlier, playing against the Amazon Warriors, and they won the game. Pretty exciting match, and of course, we will no doubt also be taking a look at the game on now with the defending champions, the Barbados Trident, 69 for 5 the last time I checked. In fact, I may be in a position to look now, 71 for 5 in over number 8, with Charles 4, Hope 3, Anderson a duck, Mears 37, the last man to go from 20 balls, 3 sixes and 2 fours, and Jason Holder. He's there. He's on 24. And Jonathan Carter, who could be a very dangerous man, he's now come to the crease. Of course, they're playing against the Patriots. But earlier, there was success for the TKR. In fact, they made 147 for 6, responding to 144 for 5. They won with 2 balls to spare, with Narine at the top, making 50 from 28 balls. Earlier, Hetmyer got 63. So the Amazon Warriors starting on a losing note. So we're going to, of course, take a look at that, and we'll continue to update you in relation to the match that is on now between the Tridents and the Patriots. 71 for 5, 8 overs gone. In relation to cricket as well, at the local level in Barbados, we note with interest the BCA. Despite COVID, they had, I consider, to be a very successful start in the T20 competition. A little bit later on, we hope to be joined by Director of Cricket, Stephen Leslie. He's going to be telling us exactly what happened. But before we go to Johnny Grave, who is the director, the CEO for Cricket West Indies, we've also got all the way in England as well, we got Philip Wallace waiting. Just of a note to you, there was a match on the weekend involving the Connaught Sports Club and St. Catharines, and I'm a little bit surprised that perhaps the media didn't pick this up, but what a fascinating game. Second division, here is this, Connaught making 206, and that certainly was a very good performance from their 20 overs, and you would think that that would have been enough to have won the game. With Dale Richards, the former West Indies batsman, making 144, with some, in terms of 6-16 and 6-4s, and 120 runs in boundaries. But listen to this. St. Catharines responded with 211 for 6 in 18 overs and 5 balls, with one Michael Holder making 119 from just 47 balls. But of interest, a little bit later on the show, we're going to invite a young man who played in that match, age 13, first match at the second division level, and he actually picked up 5 wickets for 46 runs, including hat-trick, young Dave Callender out of St. Philip. And I thought it was of so much interest that I would certainly want to not only talk about the performance of Connaught and, of course, of St. Catharines, but a little bit later on the show, we hope certainly to talk to that young man. But without any further ado, let's go to Johnny Grave, the CEO of Cricket West Indies. Johnny, nice to see you. How are you this evening?
I'm well, thanks, Andrew. Good evening to you and to your other guests.
Good. And, of course, Philo Wallace, looking like a lawyer. Hello, Philo. How are you, my friend? Looking very thoughtful there.
Andrew.
How is the weather? How is the weather in England?
Well, the weather in England, Andrew, is settling down. The hot days have passed. And, obviously, it's humid.
Yes.
Not a lot of heat. It's just humidity, you know. Mm. But it's still comfortable. You can still go into the city with a T-shirt on.
Yeah.
It's not too bad of weather at all.
Not too bad, of course. All right, now let's start with you, Johnny. CPL starting, happy about it?
Yeah, I think it's great so that we've got cricket back on in the region. I think we're very proud of the fact that with England and Wales Cricket Board, we were able to bring international cricket back to the world. And now with the CPL, it's the first you know, sort of international domestic T20 tournament, if that makes any sense, coming back to the world. So I think it's great for everyone in the region. It's brilliant for our players, and it's great for cricket fans around the world that they've now got, you know, almost double headers every single day for the next few weeks to enjoy some quality action on the field in Trinidad.
How do you benefit Cricket West Indies from the CPL?
Well, it's cricket happening in the Caribbean. Simple as that. I mean, it's you know, fantastic for our players. You know, that we haven't had any regional cricket since the West Indies Championship finished in March. So you know, I think the West Indians involved in CPL alone will pick up collectively almost $2 million. So it's really important for them as professional cricketers that they can earn some, I'm sure, much needed match fees from this tournament. For us, when we were discussing whether CPL could take place safely, we were thinking that it may be a really important preparation for the Men's World Cup and the title that we're looking to defend. Obviously, subsequently, that's been postponed by the ICC. But notwithstanding that, it's just great to get cricket back in the region. It's great to be bringing, you know, I think a real testament to the professionals on and off the field, but particularly those in cricket operations and the medical teams, to be able to get CPL going safely in Trinidad is fantastic news for everyone.
Just before we go to Dr. Ford, who's going to be no doubt asking a question pretty soon, along with Phil O'Wallace, I note with interest, though, that coming out of I-95 in Trinidad and Tobago, the president of the local board was a bit concerned about the fact he's making the point that CPL owes Cricket West Indies $1.7 million. Is that true, Johnny?
I think probably from our June management accounts, that would have been the figure. CPL players' license fees on a quarterly basis. So that figure probably was valid for about 24 hours. I think we received their quarterly license fee payment probably a day later than we would normally expect to, on the 30th of June. I think we received it on the 1st or 2nd of July. So for a very short period of the time, that was the figure. But obviously, once that quarterly payment of the license fee had been received, it's down to 1.4 million. And that's been a historical figure for a while now, relating to development fees that were due, 360,000 a year, dating back from 2015, 2016, 2017 and 2018. So that's how that figure has arose. There's no dispute now in that figure. And I think clearly the payment plan is having to change on the back of COVID-19. And we've certainly prioritised getting the tournament started and on this year. But we're in regular dialogue with CPL. And as I say, that figure's not disputed. It's 1.4 million. We've received over $1 million this year from the CPL towards this tournament in their license fees, which are up to date. So it's a historical figure, and yeah, we're working closely with them to ensure that as soon as it, you know, cash flow permits, that debt will be cleared.
Doc?
Hi, good night.
What a time to bring you in with a debt, Doc.
Hi, and to the listeners. Mr. Grave, how important is the hosting of CPL to being a template for Cricket West Indies, being able to host another international series, if not this year, early next year?
Yeah, look, it's very important. I think the fact that Dr. Mansingh, Dr. Dowlett, our chief medical officer, and Dr. Obergulson have been heavily involved in with their respective numbers at the England Wales Cricket Board on that tour that took place in June and July in England. And they've been involved from the outset with CPL on this tournament, working very closely with the Ministry of Health in Trinidad and the Chief Medical Officer there. So it's I guess the first opportunity that we're working on our own rather than with the ECB. But we've taken all of that learning from the England tour into these plans for CPL. And certainly they will become the blueprint for us for any other tournament that takes place, working with those the medical staff that we have at Cricket West Indies. Clearly, it will have to be adapted depending on the local laws and the local quarantine requirements, etc., by instilled by the ministries of health. But certainly for us, it's really important that the tournament takes place safely. And it will be, you know, fantastic for us in West Indies to have been able to take part in the first ever game post-COVID. And certainly this will be the first tournament with multiple teams, overseas players coming from all over the world. It's a really good opportunity for us to continue to adapt our plans to ensure that we can get cricket back being played safely under the sort of COVID-19 restrictions that are going to be here for a while, I think.
Okay. At the onset of COVID-19, when we looked at the finances of Cricket West Indies, you had speculated that since we just had mostly home tours outside of the T20 World Cup, that our revenue wouldn't have been affected because we usually don't make profits from unless the big three come here. After that, we were informed of some attrition in terms of fees and also individuals working with CWI just before the England tour. And since then, the Cricket World Cup has been cancelled. We're not going to be going to Australia, and some other things have happened. Are there any updates as it relates to the financial maneuvers required by Cricket West Indies as far as COVID is concerned? Any updates?
Look, it's extremely challenging at the moment, not just for us, I'm sure for most organisations within the Caribbean and around the world, and we're certainly no different. But look, we put together some short-term recommendations that we made to the board of directors back in the end of May. We've implemented all of those. So to that extent, our sort of business continuity plan on the back of COVID-19 is going as we planned and envisioned back in May. We took the very difficult decision to cut all the staff salaries and all our contractor salaries by 50%, as well as all the funding to our territorial boards, local associations and other stakeholders that we fund. But on the back of that action and the back of, being able to operate, I guess, with ICC funding, what we have been able to do is, from when we last spoke, we have no debt to our players. We've cleared all the match fees owed to players, to all our regional umpires from regional cricket. We've in fact been able to reduce our territorial debt to our territorial boards and local associations by almost 25% since COVID. So we've made some financial progress, but it's still very, very challenging at this stage. And there's still a huge amount of uncertainty as to when our next home tour will be, and therefore really when our media rights revenue will start to really flow again. But certainly, when we last spoke, we had a plan that was approved by the board that would, as I said, was sort of termed our business continuity plan. And we've implemented all of those short-term recommendations. And so far, everything that we expected is gone as we planned.
Phil, you wanted to ask Mr. Grave a question?
Well, obviously, Johnny, there's a lot happening with Cricket West Indies. Obviously, COVID has really knocked the sails out of your sails, and you're trying to obviously streamline things. We just had a tour of England, which I commend you and all those who were involved for getting that tour underway. It has obviously kickstarted cricket in this country and in the world. But coming out of that tour, Johnny, there would have been some concerns. I know the director spoke about what plans he have, but saying that there are financial constraints, how are those things going to be put in place? And what are the territorial boards going to add to help Cricket West Indies with these development processes that have to happen?
Yeah, I think that was part, Philo, of our philosophy of trying to reduce our territorial board debt. So again, by reducing that by 25%, literally in the last few days, as well as continuing to fund the territorial boards with payments every month, not just to the franchise, but also to the boards, mm-hmm. To help with their grassroots and development programs. We hope that as COVID-19 starts to lift the restrictions in terms of schools going back, community club cricket being able to be restarted, we can at least get cricket back at the local level. We know, obviously, that we had the T10 tournaments in St. Vincent and St. Lucia. We know that club cricket's going back in Barbados, which is, fantastic news for us. And we desperately want to get local cricket back being played when it's safe to do so and when the government restrictions allow it to take place, because I think outside of CPL, it is going to be really challenging for us to get regional professional cricket back on in anytime soon, because we have regional airlines that aren't flying regularly between all the countries. We've got the borders currently closed in Guyana and Trinidad. And in order for us to get private charters and private jets flying in teams, is going to be financially a massive challenge for us at regional level. So I think in the short term, we're certainly looking at restarting cricket outside of CPL and international cricket, certainly from a grassroots up point of view. And that's why that regular funding to our territorial boards and local associations, and hopefully them getting local support from both public and private sector, will be really important in terms of keeping cricket going in the next few months.
Mm, very, very interesting. Yeah. Doc, you have a question for him?
What's the next revenue generating thing for Cricket West Indies? And do you envisage having to look for funding, a loan, or what do you think has to be done as far as the revenue side is concerned? Because from speaking to you, I'm not really sure when our next prospective money-making venture will be.
Yeah, look, I think clearly with the confirmation from ICC now that we've got an ICC events program, we know that the Women's World Cup's been delayed 12 months. We know that the Men's World T20 that we're going to defend the title is going to be in India now, not Australia, next year. We know that it'll be Australia the following year, and now a postponed World Cup in the 50-over format, which is the massive event that will take place in India in 2023, is now in October, November. So we've got that clarity now from ICC around the events program that allows us to sort of plan with the other full members of ICC as to what the future tours program looks like. I think you're right. I think probably the next tour, we'll have to postpone any tour till after the IPL. So following the Caribbean Premier League, it's most likely that our players will go to Dubai to play in the Indian Premier League. And that will take us through to middle of November. And then under the current future tours program, in November and December, we're due to be in New Zealand. And again, whether that can take place, we don't know at this stage with any degree of certainty. Clearly, the COVID-19 situation in New Zealand was pretty positive a week or so ago, and they've had a small outbreak in Auckland. So, we hope that really the future tours program from November and December post-IPL can really go as planned. So we would hope that we could go to New Zealand. We would hope then in the new year we could go to Bangladesh, and hope that we could host Sri Lanka in February, March as scheduled to do so. And then really we're looking about not just hosting Australia and Pakistan next summer, but also trying to get our rearranged tours of South Africa and New Zealand here as well. So I think that period between IPL at the end of May through to CPL, it's going to be exceptionally busy for us, we hope, on the back of, getting back to sort of some sort of normality post COVID-19. And clearly we hope with what will happen with certainty over the tours, or greater certainty with the tours, that we can close out our media rights agreements and therefore money will flow. But that's certainly the challenge. And look, as I've mentioned to you before, we've completed the acquisition here of Coolidge Cricket Ground. So we have this fantastic asset here in Antigua, and we're certainly looking to leverage that asset from a financing point of view, not just to improve the facility and invest in not just the cricket facilities to turn into a world-class cricket training base and high-performance centre, but also to invest in the commercial activities that we think we can get there. It's obviously a uniquely positioned 16-acre site right next to the airport. So there are commercial activities that we hope to improve and enhance with a redevelopment program. But also we hope that that will free up some of the cash that we used to acquire the venue in the first place. So we've got some plans to ensure that we can leverage CCG for our cash, to support our cash flow in the medium term. And that along with the rest of the strategy that we've got in place that we got signed off by the board in May of this year, we hope will ensure that that we can continue to operate, and to keep as much cricket going on at local level, but also regional and international level as COVID-19 sort of allows us to, really.
Mm. Mm. So it is looking as if we may not have a tour in relation to New Zealand.
I think, Andrew, it's too early for us to say with any degree of certainty. We're in regular talks with New Zealand. I've probably spoken to David White, the chief executive there, probably half a dozen times over the last 2 weeks. Mm. We're certainly looking at it. It will require us to be able to fly to New Zealand on commercial flights. We won't be able to afford financially private charters to New Zealand, and neither will New Zealand cricket probably be able to do what England did, which is lay those on for us. So, you know, there are some challenges for that tour to take place, but certainly ones that we are approaching with an open mind. And look, I think you've seen through the fact that we've got England tour to take place. You know, it would have been much easier for us just to say, look, it's not safe, it's too uncertain, it's too complicated, let's postpone things. But you know, we've got a very much a can-do attitude here. We want to get cricket on. It's important that we get cricket on, not just for our players, but for the region as a whole. And it's in the DNA of the organisation. Now, we're a cricket organisation, and we must do everything we can, once it's safe to do so, to get cricket back being played at all levels within the system. And obviously that includes international right at the top. But as Philo said, it's just as important that we get schools cricket and club cricket getting back being played across the region when the ministries of health allow us to do so.
Doc?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mentioned we have a can-do attitude, and you compare that to South Africa not being able to come here. Explain for us, what were the real limiting factors that prevented the South African tour? Are there factors related to the COVID? Are there factors related to Cricket West Indies, or factors related to the South African board and their situation with COVID?
I think they're purely down to COVID-19. I mean, we've seen, as of today, that South Africa women's team have confirmed that their government will not give them permission to leave South Africa. So the South Africa borders are shut, even though England were willing to put on a private charter for them in a similar way that they put one on for us, for the men's team. South Africa government have said no, they won't allow the women to go to England. So I think even if we'd and just to be clear, we couldn't have done this, but even if we could have laid on a private charter for South Africa men, the South African government, based on information that we're getting today in respect to their women's team, means they wouldn't have been able to get here. So, you know, clearly for us, New Zealand and South Africa, in the case of New Zealand, three long-haul flights in South Africa, two long-haul flights, you know, just unfortunately with international travel and the restrictions of COVID-19 meant that it was impossible for them to get here. So, but that said, I've had assurances from both Cricket South Africa and New Zealand Cricket that they will absolutely do everything they can to fulfil as quickly as they can their obligations to tour here and make up those fixtures. I'm certainly confident that we will be able to host them as long as we can get them here through, as I said, commercial flights rather than private charters.
Philo, you're part of a task force. How did your task force see the CPL as very important?
I was part of a task force. Hold on, Philo.
So you're no longer on the task force?
The task has ended. So okay. Obviously the force has to be to break up. The selectors are in place. Drew, everybody's in place, and the whole proposal was endorsed by the board.
Okay.
When you look at CPL, Andrew, obviously Johnny's in a better position than I am in relation to how beneficial it is to Cricket West Indies and cricket in the Caribbean. I have my own reserves about CPL. When you look at it, you know, obviously now with the COVID-19, we're going to see more local players being exposed, despite having a lot of international players. But I didn't really get the real gist of CPL doing a whole lot for cricket. Obviously, from a West Indies cricket board point of view, they believe that CPL is beneficial. Maybe financially it is, although they still owe money. And there are benefits that we don't know about that is happening within the two organizations. But I would just like to see CPL give a bit more to the region. I think when you look at it, our regional cricket really needs the influx of the finances and help financially. And I think CPL can push some of that finances down to those regional boards that Johnny's speaking so eloquently about, and just try to help us in our development of our cricketers. That is where that all money needs to go, and get the right people as well involved in helping to develop our young cricketers. So FCPL to me is going to work for the Caribbean. I need to see CPL giving more funds to the development of cricket in the region. Mm. And obviously make sure that it is well supervised or well managed and have the right personnel in place to deal with development, because its development is what is going to push our cricket forward. I don't think that the stars that we have now, we need to get some new stars coming through rather quickly, and it can only happen through a lot of funding and the right people being involved, and obviously the facilities as well. They'll have to try to get facilities up and running in order to get these things to happen.
Johnny, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think Philo is absolutely right. We need CPL to be first and foremost the best T20 tournament that it possibly can be. But it also, you know, it's really important that we work closely with them. They're our partners, to ensure that they're benefiting, you know, the whole sort of environment of West Indies cricket as much as they possibly can. I think this tournament, we've got 100% West Indian umpires. I think that's a great sort of opportunity for our umpires, but also one that we would want to ensure takes place in all tournaments moving forward. We've got more of
All right, we seem to be having a little bit of
now have in place, has been embraced by CPL, partly, as Philo said, that's because of COVID-19, but it means hopefully we've got the opportunity now for those West Indian coaches, those West Indian physios and strength and conditioning coaches to show to the franchises how qualified and good they are at their roles. And you know, we've worked very closely with CPL, Jimmy Adams and I, working with CPL, trying to get new initiatives in. We've got the Emerging Players Program that's now in place that, you know, not just sees two emerging players selected by the Cricket West Indies selectors assigned to each squad, but they also have guaranteed game time. So, you know, the fact that Jaden Sales was playing today for Trinidad on the back of playing in the Under-19 World Cup, I agree with Philo, we've got to see as many of our best young players getting not just the opportunity to sort of get a contract in CPL, but it's just important that they actually get game time. And that's why we went as far as to mandate that they must play a minimum of 5 matches on the field. We've reduced the number of overseas players in the starting 11. So we've reduced that by 1 player in the last 2 editions of CPL. And these are all sort of ways in which we're trying to work collaboratively with them to, yes, it needs to be the best tournament that it can be, but it also needs to do as much as it can for, you know, the whole of cricket in the West Indies. And also, you know, we have to recognise the role it plays in promoting the Caribbean. I think they're anticipating global TV audiences of over 400 million people for this tournament. So, you know, it's really going to shine the light on Trinidad. It's hopefully going to shine the light on the Caribbean and everything that the Caribbean stands for. That's clearly not going to be as positive as it would normally be, because of the fact that they're all being played behind closed doors. So we'll lose that carnival atmosphere in the stadiums, but it's still going to be a great advert for everything in the Caribbean. And as I said, the CPL are still very much in their investment phase. You know, they made a small surplus, I believe, last year and broke even the year before, but almost certainly with COVID-19, the additional costs and also the lack of revenue from ticket sales, it's almost certainly going to go back into being an investment tournament this year. And we can't lose sight of that. But at the same time, you know, there is, I don't think the relationship between us, Cricket West Indies as the governing body, and CPL as our partners running the league has been better. And I think we've got really good ideas and dialogue. And as Philo says, we have to keep pushing CPL to benefit West Indies cricket as much as we possibly can, as well as help CPL to be the best possible tournament that it can be.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know in the interest of time, we got to move on. Philo, I would want your comment on this as well. Of course, a report from the Independent Task Force for Corporate Governance Reform suggested a review of the governance and framework of CWA, including a smaller board of 12 rather than 18 and down to 9 eventually. Your reaction to that, Philo Wallace?
Well, Andrew, I honestly believe that the West Indies Cricket Board, the directorship was just too big.
Too big?
I don't see the sense of having two directors. First of all, from a territory, and then you have shareholder directors.
Okay.
I don't see the sense in it at all. I think that the presidents of the territorial board should be the directors of West Indies Cricket, answerable to their boards. Their boards mandate those directors. Mm-hmm. These are what we want you to ask Cricket West Indies on XYZ. And then they feed back the information. I think too many cooks spoil the broth. I mean, you look at Cricket West Indies, so many things are being leaked. You don't know from who or from where. Mm. When you have a smaller board, you have a bit more control. You can manage a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And decisions are more decisions are better made. You know, there's less bartering. Well, there'll be some bartering still, but there'll be less bartering. But you'll have more decision making. And you can structure your board accordingly. You know, we have, and I'm going to keep knocking this. We have a massive, the Cricket Development Committee. And what does that do? Mm. We have people sitting on the Cricket West Indies board for so many years. And what are they doing for Cricket West Indies? Nobody knows. So if we cut that board down to 12 and even down to 9, I'd be quite happy. Mm. And I hope that the management team, including Johnny, the president and the vice president, all those guys who are involved in the decision making, can see the benefit of that report and try to turn it into action.
Mm.
And let's get West Indies cricket moving forward. It's too big a board,
mm-hmm. Johnny,
for not to make any decisions going forward at all.
John, your reaction to what Philo said?
Well, look, I'm not a member of the Cricket West Indies board, but obviously I've worked in cricket for 20 years and I've seen huge changes in governance. I was at Surrey County Cricket Club when they went through a massive transition on the back of redeveloping the Oval in London. And went through enormous change from being a committee-led organisation to a £25 million business. We've seen reform that the ECB have done. We know that Cricket Australia now has an independent board. New Zealand Cricket has an independent board. As Philo said, you know, this is another task force. I think, you know, I only have to look at the list of the names and the amount of time that these people have volunteered to West Indies cricket to give them their advice and their expertise and their knowledge. So look, I think all I would say is I've seen firsthand how many hours that task force, and I'm sure Philo can speak to what he went through in volunteering his time along with the other members of the task force on selection. You know, I think Cricket West Indies needs to be enormously grateful for people that give up their time, whose interests are in the betterment and improvement of West Indies cricket. And I think, you know, the fact that the Webby report has been publicised to all stakeholders, it's live on our website now for people to download. And I know it's going to be discussed with our board of directors in terms of what's the process to review it and obviously take it ultimately to the shareholders of West Indies, who will have the final say as to whether it's adopted or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all part of the wider strategy of transforming West Indies cricket on and off the field. And it's, you know, governance reform is in our strategic plan. It's important that we can demonstrate to the region, to sponsors, to stakeholders, to media companies that we're running West Indies cricket as professionally as we can on and off the field. So, I look forward to seeing, you know, how the Webby report is, you know, discussed and at some stage I hope implemented in the near future.
Doc?
Yeah, I must compliment Cricket West Indies on the transparency as it relates to the report. And the report speaks of a contraction in all areas and also redefining the role of the president and vice president. As far as the dynamic in boards is concerned, it has to do with how the members interact and how academic they are, because some groups like to discuss and be, you know, looking at possibilities and talking more than acting, being a bit too theoretical. But I'm hoping that with the reduced numbers, and if you can get members of specific skill sets and maybe even independent members, on the boards, it would help to eliminate the worry of insularity and bartering and all that. But I don't know if the report, outside of that, mentioned anything to do with the finances or the economic aspects. I haven't checked past the summary. But getting back to the cash flow of Cricket West Indies. How can you make the merchandising and have you gone back to your sponsors and renegotiated things since they are affected by COVID-19? Or are you looking at getting more sponsors with smaller packages? What is there any economic thrust from, as the board is constructed now, to try to work on the finances? Because I find that's one thing that I don't think I hear a lot about from Cricket West Indies.
Look, I think we're ambitious with our commercial program. We announced, obviously, a new deal with Castor Clothing at the start of the England tour. I think we sold more merchandise with Castor in the last couple of months than we've sold in the last 12 months beforehand. So we've got enormous support from Sandals Resorts as our principal partner. We've got Colonial Medical Insurance as on board as in a significant sponsorship that supports our 50-over formats of the game at both domestic and international level. We've announced a long-term multi-million-dollar deal with Betway as our official betting partner. So, yeah, look, we're doing everything we can to grow revenues and as well as I've mentioned before, also looking to be as efficient as we can be and save costs and make good decisions. So I think governance is an important aspect of that. Clearly, a smaller board would be less costly. So there are benefits of the governance reform on the finances. And I think in the case studies that the task force looked into, particularly in New Zealand cricket, they spoke to significant improvements in their profitability on the back of their governance reform. And I think they put it down a lot to changes in governance. So we can only hope that if we go through a similar process, we'll have similar outcomes.
In the interest of time, Johnny, we're not going to keep you too much longer. We've been joined by noted journalist Fazir Mohammed. Let's move on, Johnny. Let's spend some time with Dave Cameron. I know you wrote to the board in relation to the audit report. What's the position with that? Is he going to get it, Dave Cameron?
No, the board made a decision that the PKF report was a private document. As I said before to you many times, Andrew, it was a hugely useful project for us in management. We've implemented most, if not all, of the recommendations, and those that we haven't have really been a delay on the back of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But we're completely transforming the way in which we operate from a financial point of view. We've restructured our finance department. All of our systems and processes have been completely overhauled on the back of that report. And again, as I said earlier, you know, Philo was involved in the selection task force. We got the governance one now. The PKF report, it helped us to completely transform the way that we're working from a financial point of view, and not just within the financial department, but also throughout the organization. So it was a private internal report. The board of directors decided that it should remain private. Mm-hmm. And until such time as we're authorised, otherwise it will remain private.
Mm. Fazir, you think that Mr. Cameron should get that audit report that he's so desperately apparently wants?
Well, whether Dave Cameron is desperate or not, I think the bigger issue, Johnny, and good evening to you, is that what is the perspective of Cricket West Indies in this continuing debate about what is essentially a private organisation but is really answerable to the Caribbean public? And when I respect the point that you're saying about it matters of remaining private, but don't you think that raises questions about credibility? And if it is that the organization were to be fully transparent, whether both positive and negatives, whatever those issues will be, then the Caribbean public would be far more understanding of the challenges faced by CWI. Because as you said, you've adopted most of the recommendations, but that's on your say. So how do we know that?
Mm.
Yeah, look, the report is a fairly dry financial document of 67 pages talking about accountancy and finance department systems and processes around procurement and other, you know, fascinating subjects like this. It really isn't necessarily something that cricket fans would be interested to. It's obviously written on a management basis in terms of the recommendations that it is, but certainly in terms of, I've spoken regularly about the improvements that it's made to our financial systems and processes. And I think we will continue to share that information through the media and to our stakeholders in terms of how we're implementing those changes. But I'm not sure cricket fans want to know that we've improved our and upgraded our Microsoft Dynamics software and our online banking systems are now being improved. I think it's important that people know that we are transforming the business on and off the field, that we're taking global best practices in the way that we operate. Where we can be transparent, we definitely are being. And I think by publishing in full the Webby report, I think is testament to that, the way in which we went around the selection task force, the way in which we've gone around some of our recent recruitments. I think that we are being as open and transparent as we should be. But I think on this one, and the content of it is very dry. It's very management financial led. And but it's a really, no, don't get me wrong. It's a really, really important management tool for us. And it's certainly guided us in completely transforming our systems and processes within the finance department and within the organization. And I think by the end of this year, subject to being able to do some additional management training on our financial software and make some further IT upgrades, we will be operating in a completely different way from every aspect of finance procurement that you would expect us to as a multi-million dollar well-run organization. So I think it was a hugely important report for us and for me in particular. And I think that, you know, we're well on the way to transforming the way that we do business, which is really important because, as I said earlier, it's not just about raising revenue for Cricket West Indies, which will always be a challenge. We have to be ultra efficient in the way in which we spend our money. We have to make good strategic choices over where to invest. And we need to be able to say to everyone in the region that we are spending the money that we raise like it's our own, and that we're making the best choices that we think we can, governed by our board of directors, in terms of trying to improve cricket throughout the region.
And if I could just squeeze in one more question, Johnny, the last time we spoke, that was probably just ahead of the England tour, and I raised the question about the balance of power in the game. And I noticed your loyal support of Surrey remains there with that image right behind you of the gas holders and so on. But is it really something that is sustainable? The present model, with the best will in the world, whatever miracles you and others may be able to perform at Cricket West Indies, it still leaves a situation where you've got the big three essentially running things. And and that's why, at the risk of sounding insistent upon it, I wonder if at the level of the ICC, that this really needs to be seriously addressed, because I don't know any other global sport where you've got such an imbalance where basically three nations dictate virtually everything really meaningful in our sport.
For serious, you know, I 100% agree, and I will forever feel like that, whether I'm working for West Indies cricket or whether I'm just an English cricket fan. I think that the resources that the England get, the Australia get and India get are not shared enough with the rest of the world. And we've seen proud nations like Pakistan, South Africa, ourselves in West Indies cricket really struggle to keep our programs and going, which ultimately means we're struggling to grow the game within our established cricket playing nations, and that isn't sustainable. I think that there is, we wrote a paper that was discussed at ICC level, chief executive level and at board level. It led to an economic impact study that the ICC did with Deloitte, similar to the big global football economic study that they do. I hoped personally that the fact that we were moving into an ODI league and a test championship league, whilst they're imperfect from a sporting perspective, because you don't play everyone on an equal number of matches on an equal basis, which I personally believe from a fan point of view doesn't make them as good as they can be. But from an economic point of view, all leagues in the world would tend to share their revenue and pool their revenue. And it doesn't go, we haven't gone that far yet. So for me, the imbalances of cricket, and we have to be very, very clear, the ICC revenues are shared equally amongst everyone other than the England Wales Cricket Board that get $10 million more, but it's over an 8-year cycle. So, for all intents and purposes, the ICC distributions are shared equally amongst everyone other than India, and that's not sustainable or fair. The ICC revenue generating events, which are the key men's tournament, are exclusively hosted by the big three. Not only that, there are enormous revenues that I don't think people are aware of that are retained exclusively by those big three countries. So all of the ticket revenue, all of the hospitality revenue, all of the concessions revenue, as well as significant hosting fees. Now, it's $750,000 per match the England and Wales Cricket Board were paid to host every game of the Cricket World Cup. Now, I think England would have made in hosting the Champions Trophy in 2017 and the World Cup in 2019 more than West Indies will get in 8 years of ICC funding. Really? So it's not just the ICC funding, it's the hosting of these big events and the way in which those revenues and host fees are taken by those big three nations. In addition to that, you know, we play bilateral cricket and all of the money from the home teams are retained by those home nations. And we believe that, you know, it was a change that took place in 2000. And I think that was pre the explosion of satellite revenue. So perhaps unintended consequences, but certainly 20 years later to see, you know, the fact that all three of those big nations are sitting on billion-dollar contracts for their domestic international rights, you know, makes the inequalities in bilateral cricket absolutely stark. And as I've said many times before, you know, we have the double whammy here in the West Indies, which we are the most expensive place in the world to play cricket, and we have one of the smallest economic markets. So it really is an unfair model. It's one that I will continue to use every platform to articulate the inequalities that are, just to be clear, the bilateral cricket is not fair and doesn't work for West Indies cricket or the smaller nations. The ICC distribution doesn't, because India get four times the amount than most other nations. And also that the ICC men's events, both in terms of how the revenue is kept by the host teams and also the fees that ICC pay them to host, it is not fair. And all those things need to be addressed as soon as they possibly can be. And I will continue to use every platform that I can, including ICC meetings, to talk about the fact that if we want to grow the game where cricket is strong and in places where we think cricket needs to grow, like new markets like the USA, we've seen rugby expand into China. We've seen how being an Olympic sport allows nations to get Olympic funding but grow fans across the world. Now, we need to do everything we can to grow the game within our traditional test-playing nations, but also in terms of in getting the sport played in places where it hasn't been played before. And to do that, we need to share the revenues more equitably, and we also need to make sure that we have competitive balance. We want to see close matches. We want to have that uncertainty that makes games interesting to fans. We don't want to see one-sided affairs where the strongest teams can dominate in all formats of the game. So as you can probably tell, my record hasn't changed and it won't be changing anytime soon until we get meaningful long-term change at both ICC and bilateral cricket.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, we're still on the subject of Dave Cameron. We're going to start with you, Fazir. Cameron wants to be the ICC chairman. First of all, do you support that? And do you think Cricket West Indies should support Dave Cameron in his bid? Fazir Mohammed.
No and no.
Say that again.
No and no.
Continue, Fazir. Come on. Give me more.
It's self-explanatory. I mean, as we talked about it previously, the issue about Dave Cameron talking now about championing the cause of West Indies cricket and the so-called smaller nations and so on, and really giving the West Indies a fair shake. He was president of Cricket West Indies for 6 years. Why didn't he champion the cause then? Mm. Was it all about just wheeling and dealing? The fact of the matter is, whatever else, this is not about personalities. This is about performance and this is about a track record. And I don't think the evidence of Dave Cameron's stewardship at the helm of Cricket West Indies suggests that he is the one to be anywhere near any sort of official position in international cricket.
Mm. Philo, should Cricket West Indies support Dave Cameron in his bid to be ICC chairman? What do you say, Mr. Wallace?
Andrew, I think it's going to be difficult for Cricket West Indies to support Dave Cameron in his bid to be ICC president.
Mm.
First of all, there's animosity between Cricket West Indies and Dave Cameron. those who are directors or even members of Cricket West Indies can say, no, there is. And Dave Cameron is going to find it very hard or very difficult to get the support of Cricket West Indies. I honestly believe that Dave Cameron should just tell himself, look, I've run West Indies cricket for 6 years. Mm. I just ease out and let cricket be and just be an observer now. Because going up for the ICC job and looking for West Indies support, it can't work. You know, it's like trying to get a dumpling to go up a hill.
Mm.
So, unfortunately, he's not going to get the support of Cricket West Indies. And we all know it. And it's very sad that a former president, you know, has come to this in the West Indies cricket. But sometimes it's the way how you rule.
Mm.
Comes back and bite you. There's something called karma. Mm-hmm. And I told Dave Cameron to his face, he was the youngest ever West Indies president, and he gave the most trouble.
Ooh.
He disrespected leaders, prime ministers in the region.
No.
That cannot work, Andrew.
No.
We're all from the islands, and we know how the islands work. It's just a matter of a phone call, mm-hmm. and it can all come tumbling down. So it's just unfortunate for Dave Cameron not to understand that there's life after presidency of West Indies cricket. You have to come back and live with the people. So I'm sorry, but he cannot get the support of Cricket West. I can't see him getting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate, but that's just to be how the cookie crumbles.
Johnny, has he asked formally for support from Cricket West Indies? I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, I believe he wrote to the president, as has been confirmed beforehand, but this is an ICC matter. It's not a Cricket West Indies matter. The ICC chairmanship is a matter for the ICC board. It's not anything to do with Cricket West Indies. Obviously, no, Cricket West Indies needs and wants a strong ICC because they're the global governing body. But I think, you know, on the basis that Mr. Cameron has filed an application here in the High Court of Antigua and Barbuda, and being appropriate for me to comment on anything to do with Mr. Cameron because of that legal claim.
Professor Ford, do you want to come in here?
Well, as a former administrator, I have a different view. I think that Cricket West Indies, as a struggling entity within world cricket, mm-hmm. has to really weigh and assess the benefits of having someone from the region in such a position. They would have to reflect on the former individuals in that position and if those individuals were able to do anything for Cricket West Indies. They also have to understand that even though some leaders may have difficulties with people management or expression or diplomacy, in a larger unit like world cricket, it's not as easy for a strong individual to impose their will on the organization. And the thing is, the checks and balances there will be certainly better. So I think we have to look at the benefits. I don't believe that if an administration doesn't agree with another one that it replaced, I don't think that it's necessary to impede them from doing something else that may be helpful to us. Because we mentioned all of the difficulties with the big three controlling everything. We've got nowhere in the last how many ever years with those other individuals who some of them may have had some administrative experience and other things. I'm not going to look at the individual, but I'm going to look at, can that individual do some good things for me? And I think I would be, as an administrator or as a group, I wouldn't say that personally I wouldn't do this and I wouldn't do that, because the group's decisions, you know, should be made after some sort of discussion. So I think that it would be prudent that they would just, you know, discuss it with him and see if he can really convince them that, you know, he should be supported. But Doc, I think some kindness is required.
Doc, I have a question for you, Doc. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Do you think Cricket West Indies should support Dave Cameron?
I think they should discuss with him and see what his plans are, assess him now that he's been gone, look at all the other front runners and see if they should support him. The truth is that I don't think he has the support to prevail in this such a big organization. I think there are other individuals who are front runners and would have more support than he would. It would also be, I would assume that he would have assessed the other boards and canvas and had a look at what his chances were.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were me and I were Mr. Cameron going for this post, I would have already calculated that I had enough support to take the post in the first place before I come out. You know, my groundwork would have ensured my success, and I would just come out just for transparency, so people would know that I'm going to be the next person based on my discussions. So, you know, to depend on Cricket West Indies is a weak approach if that's something that he really needs. But, you know, I think that I wouldn't give a judgment straight off. I think it would be good that they give give all the individuals who want support a hearing and make a decision as a group.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
Andrea, just...
Fazi, you want to respond?
I don't... No, just want to clarify once again that this isn't a Cricket West Indies matter. You know, it's not something that Cricket West Indies vote on. The ICC chairman is for the ICC board.
Okay.
It's not a Cricket West Indies matter. When Shashank Manohar was elected, it didn't come to the Cricket West Indies board to say, are we happy to for Mr. Cameron as the ICC director to vote for Shashank to remain in office. This is not a Cricket West Indies matter. The ICC nomination and election for their chairman of the board is an ICC board matter. It doesn't need or require any approval or endorsement from Cricket West Indies. We're not part of the process at all.
Just before you go, Johnny, final question. I know you've got to leave us now. Fazi, you can certainly comment on what Dr. Ford said. What's the latest in relation to Courtney Brown, Eldine Baptiste, and Vasper Drakes? Can you update us before you go, Johnny?
There's no update as far as I'm aware. The matter is still going through the legal process. So.
Oh, I see. All right, Johnny, you look a little tired. We won't want to drag you into anything in relation to this very contentious matter. Enjoy the rest of your evening and continue to support Surrey.
Thank you very much. See you, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed. All right, we're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, I'm sure that my very good friend Fazia Mohammed wants to respond to Dr. Ford. And also, we also have Stephen Leslie, our director of cricket, coming in to talk to us as well. All right, Fazia. Your response to what Dr. Ford said.
Totally. As I said, no one knew. I don't see it as a matter that should be considered seriously at all. Again, because of Mr. Cameron's track record as president of Cricket West Indies for 6 years. And as far as I'm concerned, the matter is finished.
Fellow?
Yeah, Andrew, this is, I said that, you know, Dave Cameron running for the ICC president or wants to be the ICC president or chairman, whatever it is. As Johnny said, it's not a West Indies Cricket Board issue, it's an ICC issue. Obviously, he's looking to garner support from Cricket West Indies. Dr. Ford has his views of as an administrator, a former administrator should get a hearing. Cricket West Indies, they've decided what they want to do in relation to Mr. Cameron's support. Yes, he's written to the board and they said, look, they're going to make the decision. I don't think it's just down to what Cricket West Indies wants to do with him. It's just unfortunate, Andrew, the former president, because the way in which he has led the cricket and the way he left office, there's a lot of animosity. And I just find it very hard to get any support for Dave Cameron coming over Cricket West Indies. He may get individual support, but he's not going to get collective support at all.
Right. Fazia, I know your time is limited. Let's concentrate on you now. The CPL very much in your country. Lots of interest there for the CPL, Fazia.
Well, it'll get there gradually because remember, we've just come out of a general election and only today, 9 days after the general election, has the opposition leader, Kamala Prasad Bisesa, conceded defeat. So now the process of the swearing in of the re-elected Prime Minister, Dr. Keith Rowley, will take place tomorrow, and then we'll have the cabinet and all of that. So understandably, when it comes to politics, that generally trumps everything. And when you've got a situation because of the bubble that is associated with COVID-19, there are no spectators there. And as you know very well, Andrew, it's billed as the biggest party in sport. And when there's no one in the ground to party when the cricket is going on, it takes away from the luster of it. But it's headline stuff. There's a level of anticipation because Trinbago Knight Riders won the opening match today. Defending champions Barbados Stridents are struggling a bit right now against the St. Kitts Nevis Patriots. So it's early days yet. It is a challenge with the COVID-19 environment, but I'm sure the interest will build as we go through the tournament.
All right. Stay with us, Fazia. You got another 3 or 4 minutes with us, Fazia, at least. All right. You talk about a bubble. We're going to go to Trinidad and Tobago now and talk to Raheem Cornwall. I'm sure you would have met him. Hello, Raheem. How are you, my friend?
Hello. Good night. I'm good.
Good night. You got a big, strong voice, just like Fazia Mohammed. How are you doing there in Trinidad and Tobago?
Well, just keeping quiet for the moment.
You're keeping quiet. Okay. In your bed, you and just watching some cricket there as well? With the Tridents playing against the Patriots, you're watching?
Yeah, just having a look at the game and knowing that we have a game coming up tomorrow, see what the conditions look like.
All right, we won't keep you too long, really. What has it been like in the bubble there in Trinidad?
Well, it's basically nothing really there to do. Once you get the opportunity to go to the gym or have team activity, you will have to participate, but otherwise than that, it's just basically in your room, there is no way to go.
Mm. What is a day like? Can you get up early in the morning? What happens for the entire day in a bubble? Lots of restrictions.
It really all depends on the activities they have for days. Like different teams have different activity on different days. So if it's our day, we probably have gym in the morning for 8:30. Then we have a tennis court training in the afternoon. And basically, that's it for the day.
Mm-hmm. I see. And you come back and you have your lunch and your dinner and... And then you're in your room for the rest of the evening, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing else really there to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, stay with us. We're going to just have you for another couple of minutes. Let's go back to Fazia Mohammed. The bubble, of course, tremendous restrictions. But, you know, just before the start of the CPL, those COVID cases rising in Trinidad and Tobago, Fazia, make it a bit awkward.
It is a bit awkward. In fact, the case is now 629.
Oh, dear.
Which basically means that we've had almost 400 cases in the space of 3 weeks. The number of fatalities has jumped 50% as well. We had 8 fatalities up until just about April and nothing since then. And now we've had 4 fatalities over the last 4 days. And that was one of the questions asked of Prime Minister Dr. Keith Rowley on Saturday when he talked about tightening the restrictions once again in Trinidad and Tobago, but he made it clear that the CPL is almost independent of the Trinidad and Tobago circumstances, very much like the England situation. Although, as I understand it, as Jason Holder mentioned over the course of the weekend, because the bubble was a bit larger in England, the players were allowed a bit more movement around the hotel and training and so on. As I understand it, they basically have to stay locked in their rooms and not venture too far outside of that. So it's very challenging, but once all of the safety and health protocols are maintained and there's no cross-contamination between the Trinidad and Tobago public and the CPL players and broadcasters and so on, or vice versa, I don't see it being an issue. There's a lot of comprehensive testing involved. And I think once everyone plays his or her part according to what's required, it should go on pretty well, as I can see it.
What are Trinidadians saying? Are they saying that perhaps there shouldn't be CPL there? Are they divided?
Well, it only came up as a political issue.
Because
we had a situation leading into the elections where a lot of people outside of Trinidad and Tobago wanted to come back in. But again, because it's a managed situation, that was taken up by the opposition as if to suggest the ruling party was trying to keep people out to stop them from voting against the government, which may or may not have been true. We don't know. But the fact of the matter is that's the only time the issue came up, because people were saying, how could you have CPL and players coming in when nationals of the country can't come in? But it's a very different situation, because this is something where everyone agrees to be isolated essentially from the Trinidad and Tobago public. I don't think any other ordinary citizen wants to be isolated completely from the Trinidad and Tobago public when they return home.
The doctor, final question for Doc. I'm calling him Doc, no doctor. Dr. Fazia Mohammed. And any question for him before he goes?
Just a slight version. Your borders have been closed for some time. So the question, where's the defect?
Okay, you were breaking up just a bit. I didn't hear your question completely.
I was saying that your borders have been closed for some time. So where's your defect?
Well, the defect would have been one, citizens coming back into the country and whether they fully observed the rules of the quarantine, which was mandatory when they came back in. Some of them didn't want to follow it and so on, and had to be almost forced to do it, had to sign documents and so on. But the bigger challenge is the porous border with Venezuela. Remember, we are just 7 miles away from Venezuela, and they have a huge humanitarian and political situation where thousands of Venezuelans, many of them documented, but many also undocumented, are now in the country. And certainly the feeling is, without the conclusive evidence at the moment, that the COVID-19 probably would have established a community spread, and that is where the issue is, a community spread by virtue of undocumented migrants coming into the country unregulated, because we obviously as a small country don't have the resources to lock down our borders as small as our country might be. So that is the feeling where it could have come in. And because Trinidadians and Tobagonians generally seem to want to think that we are almost impervious to these things, that we can party and fet and lime and whatever. For example, even when the Prime Minister made the announcement on Saturday that everything was going to be locked back down on Monday morning, that was really the cue for everyone to rush to the beaches and to the River Limes on Sunday, and the place was absolutely packed out. So for all we know, thousands of people would have contracted COVID-19 on that Sunday.
And final question, in terms of politics, Fazir, what's going on there? Kamala Prasad is not conceded. She's thinking other things. Fazir, what's going on there?
Well, you'll be happy to know that she conceded today.
Oh, she did.
Earlier today, she did concede. There were recounts for four seats, which were generally felt to be unnecessary because they weren't close at all. The closest was a difference of 800 votes. And many were of the view that this was unnecessarily delaying the process. Mm. They maintained, that is the opposition, that they had a constitutional right if they felt that there were anomalies and issues to be attended to. And I think right now, the UNC has a huge public relations challenge on their hands to show that they weren't just being obstructionist, because essentially it was pretty clear that the PNM had prevailed. And as we understand it, Dr. Keith Rowley will be sworn in for his final term tomorrow.
So he says.
Well, he said it, and if he were to go back on it, I don't think the public of Trinidad will be allowed to forget it.
Not at all.
So we'll see how things go.
And I understand a big pickup for you, Fazir, director of sports like Stephen Leslie.
Sorry?
I understand you're going to get a big pick, Fazir.
No, I'm not. I try my best. In fact, I voted for one of the parties that got 192 votes in my constituency. That's the Progressive Empowerment Party. Because I don't vote PNM. I don't vote UNC. Mm. I usually would have voted for an organization called the Movement for Social Justice, which is sort of like a social organization.
Right.
But because they're such a small organization, they couldn't afford to have representation in all 41 constituencies. Mm. So rather than let my vote go to waste, I voted for another one of the minor parties.
And it still went to waste.
And so, but I don't consider it going to waste, because I think people who believe that the PNM and the UNC are going to take this country forward, they are wasting their votes.
All right. What a way to end. Fazir, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Take care.
All right. Good. All right. Okay. So we're going to, of course, talk to Raheem Corn. Thanks, Fazir, for coming through and talking to us. When we look at it, Raheem, in terms of the bubble, how is the bubble in Trinidad and Tobago different from the one in England?
The one in England is much more different. You could move around freely. You could socialize a bit more with your teammates in England. But the one in Trinidad, you can't do that. I think when you come to Trinidad, you're in your room for the first 7 days. Isolation can come out.
Mm.
Whereas in England, you just do the test, and once you're negative, you're free to move about the facility, but you just can't leave.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Doc, any questions for young Raheem?
So, Cornwall, what are your immediate goals or aspirations for the tournament?
Well, I'm not really a big person to set goals, but I just have to go out there and try to do my best and see how much games I can win for the St. Lucia Zoo.
I see. Well, we want to thank you for coming through, Raheem, and talking to us. I don't know, Philo, you anything to say to your favorite cricketer, Philo?
Yeah, well, obviously, I just want to ask Raheem, what lessons have you learned coming out of the tour of England?
Good question.
And obviously, you're now in a T20 setup, but there must have been things that you've learned here in England during the trip that you can use in the T20 format there or share with your teammates in Trinidad and Tobago. So what lessons were learned for you here coming out of England and now into Trinidad?
Well, I learned a lot. I think I don't think I would have much to bring into the T20 format, but the longer version anyway is more patience and back your skills and understand conditions well. I think England is a challenging place, and I think it's test your game as an international cricketer to improve every day on your game to play in different conditions.
Mm-hmm. And you can play different conditions in Trinidad as well, because you're playing at Brian Lara Stadium, which conditions be different to the Queen's Park Oval. So there will be something from this tour, the tour of England, that you can use in that T20 format. And I think that someone like you, who has the international experience, a lot obviously is expected of you in that T20 format. Although you have limited experience at test level, I still believe that you have a lot to show in the T20 format. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's two different grounds, and as they say, you just have to adapt to the conditions when you get the opportunity to perform in both venues. So you're all down to the individual to adapt quickly and adjust to their game.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right, well, Raheem, thanks very much for coming through. Get some rest. You got some big matches coming up soon. We hope to come and talk to you sometime a little bit later on. So enjoy the rest of your night.
All right, thank you.
All right. You see Keswick Williams is there as well, and there's a lovely... Oh, I think he might have bought that cap somewhere in Barbados, maybe somewhere in Bridgetown. And we also have Director of Cricket, Stephen Leslie, who is very much in the line as well. Stephen, good evening to you. How are you?
Hi, good evening, Andrew. I'm doing quite well.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the first day in the local competition, give an assessment. Were you happy? Protocols were followed and everything?
Well, Andrew, we had 100 teams who determined that they want to play T20 cricket in Barbados, and that was very heartening at the start. I had the opportunity to visit about 5 different venues at the top level, the Combined Elite and Division 1, and I would say that the general observation was that everyone was making efforts to ensure that there were temperature checks, that persons were sanitized, that masks were being worn upon entry into the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. The cricketers and the umpires on the field of play certainly made a lot of adjustments to the cricket norms. For example, when persons were celebrating the fall of a wicket, you found the persons, you know, choosing to go to elbow knots as opposed to the traditional high fives. When the ball was thrown back to the umpire at the fall of a wicket, the umpire didn't catch it. The umpire actually had it roll to the feet on each occasion. So we had the opportunity that persons really were, you know, enjoying the game, taking wickets, but certainly trying to do their best to keep as safe as possible during the course of the matches.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring Keswick Williams in. He's in the bubble. Keswick, how are you, my friend? Keswick, you got to put your mic on. We want to hear you. Can we hear him now?
Is it on?
Oh, no, yes. So we can hear you from Barbados right through to the White House with Donald Trump. Now talk to us.
As I was saying, it's not a norm, but at the end of the day, it's something we have to work with. We know the conditions. We know what's happening in the world right now with COVID-19. So, I mean, this is something we all have to get accustomed to. We're international cricketers, and it's something that we have to adapt to it very soon. But I mean, life in the bubble is not the best. It's not the best, but I'm working with it. I'm a loner, so I'm cool.
Can you explain what you mean by that? You're saying that the bubble is not the best. Can you explain that?
It's like when somebody's telling you that you can't do something, it makes a difference than when you can freely do it. Oh. I mean, for me, I'm usually in my room. I'm usually in my room, or so I don't really go much places, but at the end of the day, when somebody's restricting you from even leaving the hotel or telling you have to wear a mask there, you have to wear a mask here, times for the pool, times for the gym and stuff like that, and then the sanitizing and all that, it just leaves you like you're in a prison. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with it, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's not something that we're accustomed to, as I say. So it kind of freaks you out sometimes that you walk through. Makes you feel like you're somewhat in prison, but it's something that we have to live with.
Ooh, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting there. Doc, you want to respond to that?
Not really. I know that there are difficulties there. Keswick, what I heard Mr. Cornwall mention, he mentioned tennis court workouts. What? Explain to us what that's all about.
I'm not hearing it clearly.
Mm. Yeah, Mr. Cornwall mentioned tennis court work as a form of practice for your for the franchises. Can you explain to us what that entails?
I'm being honest, I'm not hearing you.
Andrew, you can relay that question.
I'm not hearing you very well, Doc. Can you speak again? Because we're not hearing you.
Yeah, I said, can you hear me now?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, a bit clear.
Okay. Right. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, Mr. Cornwall mentioned the use of tennis court workouts in your limited opportunities. What do you do on the courts?
We try to do a bit of catching, a bit of feeling. I mean, it's not the right surface to do it. But at the end of the day, as I said earlier, as international players, you have to learn to adapt to certain things. It won't be the best. But at the end of the day, we're all here to play cricket. All the team is doing it, so we have to do it. It's a form of getting us out there, getting us ready for games. I mean, probably a bit of spot bowling because I do it. All the teams do it. So at the end of the day, you just have to do it. You just have to adapt to certain things. Everybody knows the situation. Everybody knows what's happening right now. So, and to be honest, it's a good sweat on the court.
Doc?
Okay, well... Back to you, Andrew.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, it seems as if Keswick is not very happy in relation to the bubble. No such bubble in Barbados, good old Stephen Leslie.
No, Andrew, there's no such bubble. I mean, you're talking about local cricketers. We are not talking about persons who are in a franchise setting who would obviously have certain obligations. But certainly the enjoyment and the enthusiasm by the cricketers in Barbados is one that we can't take for granted. I believe that when the BCA board met to determine T20 for this season, we had a lot of requests made to play 2-day cricket, 3-day cricket. Some wanted to play 50 overs. So in the decision, we tried to keep everyone as safe as possible. And I think that once persons continue to observe the protocols, Andrew, you can see from the performances on day one. Certainly, you highlighted it earlier where there were a couple of games where there were two centuries made. I believe it was in the Division 2 segment.
Yes.
We had Roshan Primus. Roshan Primus was certainly electrifying at the Wanderers Cricket Ground. And I remain mystified as a person who observes cricket that the powers that be, and I respect when Philo speaks highly and very frankly, because the way how we as Barbadians and those administrators who have the opportunity and the ears of other persons cannot speak of a Roshan Primus in a favorable enough light to get him into the setting of franchises. I really can't understand how, the DPL is going on and he's not in Trinidad. And I really, at the end of the day, I mean, Philo is shaking his head. The realities are that we have to be able to solidify and to make call a spade a spade. I think Roshan Primus is supremely talented as a T20 cricketer. And we've got, as you know, six franchises in Trinidad right now. He's playing his trade here in a local cricket game for Wanderers. The main thing, however, though, is that he, along with all the others who are here in Barbados, will have the opportunity over the next few weeks. We have a three-month season. The season, as you know, started on August 15th. We go until November 14th. And those even who are in CPL have the opportunity to return just about mid-season in terms of the preliminary stage. And once those guys return, we are hoping that they can really boost the confidence of their teams and be able to have really an exciting finish to our 2020 season here in Barbados.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, I would like to respond to Stephen. Stephen, we're picking our friends. We're not picking performers. You don't have to answer. I pick no bow. I bitch no bows about it. We pick our friends. We are not looking at cricketers. We're picking a fella because he's a friend, and he's killing our cricket and he's killing our cricketers. Roshan Primus, 3 or 4 years ago, was the cricket of the year in Trinidad and Tobago. I told the chairman of Selector Trinidad and Tobago, this man should remain here and play his cricket. He did wonderfully well in Trinidad, and then they released him because of some fracas with some player. And now the man finds himself outside. This guy was in Ghana, Amazon Warriors T20 setup. Now he's outside of T20 cricket. So what are we doing in Barbados? We're allowing to play for Wanderers. I would just like him to continue to score lots of runs and just try to get away from it. Not only Joffa Archer is going to leave, take it light. Keep running the young cricketers with talent and you'll see where they'll go. You'll keep spinning Tottenham mud and you will get no talent coming out of West Indies.
But I would add very quickly, Andrew, that he's one of our BCA contracted players who would receive a monthly stipend from the association. And that in itself shows that we know that he's an extremely talented cricketer. Mm. We really need, I believe, to go to that next level of fellow where persons truly make representation to get him in the setting. Because I mean, I can show the experience when I had an opportunity to work with someone like even Keswick, who's here. When Keswick first came into the setting at that point, there was no doubt about his cricketing ability, but persons wanted to work on that individual in terms of trying to get other aspects of his whole personality and other things in place. And within months, Keswick went into a different setting and then played for the West Indies and continues to be a successful T20 bowler for the West Indies. So I think we need to spend some time with the young cricketers, as you said earlier, make an investment and really get away from what you called it in terms of picking friends and really try to pick cricketers who we believe will be able to represent the West Indies at the international level with the consistency that we really need, Philo, because it's come down to consistency, not the ability. And I think that Roshan Primus is somebody who we need to get in the T20 setup as soon as possible.
Keswick, let's come back to you, Keswick, because I know that your time is limited. You're suggesting that things are not so good in terms of the bubble. What would you want to be different, Keswick, if you had to speak to the friends at CPL and given your situation, what would you want to change?
To be honest with you, there's not much that could possibly be done. As you know, the cases in Trinidad are rising, and it's rising very fast. But as I say, it's just something that we're not accustomed to. So a lot of cricketers want to feel at home, you know what I mean? Because you have being told what to do is a different thing than being or doing something that you're accustomed doing freely. But for example, I think they just have a games room where they move like a pool table, a tennis table, and some other games that you can go, you know, and just try to relax and play some games, have some fun, do some domino, play some video games or something like that. So it's getting better now because I just saw them moving some stuff there today. So it's getting better now that you can go out and play your games and move around a little bit freer. But at the end of the day, as I say, it's not something that cricket is accustomed to, because for now, like for example, a normal change that night, I probably might be in the savannah having some food or chilling with some Trinidadian friends and drinking some punch or something, you know what I mean? But, I mean, we know the conditions, so we just have to live by it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, can I ask a quick question to Keswick?
Sure.
Yeah, as you be aware, Keswick, it's good to see you from this in this
Definitely.
Forum.
Definitely.
I wanted to know, obviously, in the country where you're hearing cases are increasingly every day. There was just a general election. Obviously, you guys are supposed to be in some bubble. Do you think that it is a situation where the cricketers in the different franchises are really as focused as they could be in terms of getting their minds ready for cricket so that they can perform at their best?
Yeah, definitely. Because for me, I know where my focus is. And even though that's going on the outside, I'm in the inside, so I know I'm safe. I know everybody that's here it's corona free, so I'm good with that. It's just a matter for us to just follow the protocols, continue to follow the protocols. But as I will always say, it's just that it's not something that we are accustomed to while being in Trinidad, you know what I mean? So it's not bugging me because I'm focused. It helps me to be a lot more focused because most of my free time I just spend in my room looking at players, how they play their shots, their strike rate in certain areas and stuff like that. So it's not bugging me that much. It just helped me to focus a bit more on my game.
Mm.
I want to say, Kezri, that you're welcome to join Cricket in Barbados as you would have done before after the CPL. There's still four preliminary rounds of T20 cricket. You can come and play for any of the clubs and be able to show them the skills that you've acquired over the years.
Yes.
Honestly, I was actually having a conversation with someone today and I was telling them the best club cricket that I've ever seen or ever played anywhere in the Caribbean is in Barbados.
Oh, wonderful.
The cricket that I am, and I always call Floyd Reef a name for what he has done for me, yourself, you know, for bringing me to Barbados, giving me the opportunity to revive my cricket, You know what I mean? And I always sing praises to the Cable University and the amount of people, amount of persons from the Cable campus who really made a career out of cricket. You know, myself, Chadwick, Ravman, Paul, we came on the scene together and he's doing well. He's now the captain of Jamaica Talawa. So congrats to him for that. You know what I mean? So the Cable campus did a lot for a lot of cricketers in the Caribbean, I should say. And it's a good movement. So keep doing what you're doing. Leslie, I know you're in a different position now, but I'm sure that you have some sort of thing to do with you still. So keep doing what you're doing, make the West Indies cricket great again.
Okay, gentlemen, we're going to just pause for our business, because when we come back, we can also open the lines now for the last 25 minutes or so of the show. So you can call us at 434-1790 and get involved in this discussion. All right, this is Mason and Guess. I'm Andrew Mason, of course, with co-host Dr. Andrew Ford. We've also got Philo Wallace all the way in London. And we've got Keswick Williams, who is in a bubble that he's not quite enjoying. And of course, we also have Director of Cricket, Mr. Stephen Leslie, having a good time at the start of the local season on Saturday. Let's go and take a call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guess.
Andrew.
Good night.
Good evening to you and your guests. I wanted through your forum to speak directly to Philo.
Sure.
Then I was calling for Rakeem Cornwall for the selectors to draft him into the West Indies team.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew was calling for Cornwall.
Yes, for a long time.
Yes. Philo Wallace was saying he too big, he too this, he too that, and all kinds of things, and how he expected to make the best in his team. I'm no surprise to know that Philo Wallace is a fan now, or he has. Let me put it this way: Cornwall is now one of Philo's favorite people on the West Indies team. I don't understand the double standards, you know. I really don't.
Philo,
you.
Philo, you want to respond to that? Oh,
I think he's suffering from chemical cyclosis because he has the wrong person.
Oh.
I never, ever, ever spoke ill about Rakeem Cornwall. I always said he's a cricketer.
All right.
Full stop. That's okay, all I
full
said.
Full stop. Let's
all out, just hear for what you're saying. All right. Please.
Okay. Let's take another call. Hello. Welcome. Mason and Guess.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night to you.
How are you all?
We're okay.
You ready to hear one? I read on the point one the new series of the series there with England and West Indies. You want to hear that?
How long is this poem?
5 verses.
No, that's too long.
It's too long.
Tell you what. Let's hear the poem next program. Let's take another call. Can we?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, good. Can we take another call? 44. Yes. Hello. Welcome, Mason and Guess. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest. Oh, we lost that call. 434-1790. You can give us a call and participate in the program. Now, let's get back to you now, Director Leslie. Any concerns at all, though? I mean, you're making the point that, yes, things went well, but are there any concerns at all from last Saturday?
Andrew, it is similar to what Keswick Williams mentioned earlier. It comes down to consistency. When you share protocols with players who are not used to following general guidelines in a very strange, I mean, the world has changed tremendously in the last 8 to 10 months. And here we in the Caribbean have a very natural mood. We go to games, for example, if it's a Saturday, we will sit in our chairs, we will want to have a drink. I mean, in Barbados, it's a day where people will eat things like sauce, etc. So when you tell a guy that you can't play three and a half hours of cricket, which is T20, and then you're asking them and others to be able to conform to what we are calling safety protocols, which are generally coming from the Ministry of Health and Wellness in Barbados, and we're basically just modified them in an effort to keep things cricket sensible. And at the end of the day, that for me and the BCA would be the thing that we would be most concerned about. Persons consistently doing the right things. And I mean, as I said, I visited 5 venues. Of those 5, one of them would not have done the temperature check, but that is nothing that you come and slap someone on the wrist for. You just encourage them to do it. And for me, then, to be able to visit the other venues, certainly at the intermediate level and the Division II level, because you can't just focus at the guys who are playing at the top division, because you want to have all of those clubs within the urban and rural parts of Barbados ensuring that they're doing the correct things. And you would know as a man that comes from St. Philip, there's this large following that will bring persons, irrespective of COVID-19, to the ground. So we want everybody to be safe and want them to enjoy the cricket that we intend to put on over the next 3 months or so.
All right. Well, Keswick has got to go pretty soon. Keswick, quickly tell us, what is the day like for you? Get up early in the morning. What happens during the course of the day?
Well, when we were on the first day, when we were on the first 7 days of quarantine, what I used to do, I used to try to watch a movie as late as possible, go to bed, try to wake up 11, 12, kill most of the day, and then do a workout. Mm-hmm. When I finish workout, it's probably like after 3, and then I just watch another movie again. And then around after 9 in the night, workout again, and then watch a movie until it's late, like all up to 2, and then wake up. So when I wake up, most of the day is finished already, so that's how I used to carry through my day when it comes to quarantine for the first 7 days.
Are you bored? Are you bored in this bubble? Very bored?
Never, to be honest with you, I was never really bored because my next to my room was Andre Fletcher, my boy. So, I mean, we were always communicating. We were always having a chat, you know what I mean? Stay far from each other and have a chat, so...
Are you sure? I just saw someone there. Is that Andrew Fletcher in your room? Dockany, any final question for Keswick?
Keswick, we're just into our second game, and I've noticed that some of contracted players and a few of the recently international players are a bit bigger than we would expect. Is the bubble conducive to you keeping fit, or do you think if is the diet right, because your activity seems to be reduced?
Yes,
but can people remain fit in this bubble
and slim too?
Definitely, mate. Definitely, I've been getting fitter. I've been getting stronger. Losing some weight as well, and I'm in the bubble as well. And for the last 6 months, Corona was all over the world, and I've been losing weight. So I don't know what's the difference, but the most I can say is that we as professional cricketers have to learn to manage ourselves, whether it's in quarantine or outside of quarantine. I guess a lot of these guys wasn't doing enough, you know, to keep themselves fit and keeping themselves in shape. But I know how important it is to keep myself fit and ready and ready to go. So I used to always just get up, do my workout as usual, and make sure that whenever that time ready and I'm called upon to perform my execute skill, I try my best to do that.
All right. Thanks, Keswick. We know you got a big meeting coming up very soon. Make sure that Andrew Fletcher's at that meeting as well. And we wish you well. He's
right. That's right. You're correct.
Yes, he's there. Hello, Andrew. Nice to see you. All right. Thanks, Keswick. We'll link with you again sometime very soon.
All right, have a good one.
All right. There you have it, Keswick Williams. 4341790. You can call us and participate in the show. We've got another 10 minutes left. This coronavirus situation, gentlemen, is a very serious thing, you know. And what we're going to do now is to play 55 seconds. And I want you gentlemen to try to pick up this voice. Let's have a listen.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to let you guys know that this morning I tested positive for COVID-19. I'm fine, I only had mild symptoms, and my family is fine and I'm recovering. I've been in isolation and quarantine for the last 7 days, and in fact I haven't even been to the office in over 3 months. So nobody there is impacted, but we're following all the Ministry of Health protocols to sanitize the office and to make sure everybody is safe there, staff and customers alike. This is a timely reminder though that COVID-19 impacts everybody, doesn't discriminate. So we need to take this thing seriously. We need to sanitize, we need to wash our hands, we need to wear our masks, and we need to social distance. We will get through this, but we have to get through this together, being our brother's keeper. So Jamaica, let's do this, let's get together, let's do the right thing. One love, Jamaica. Thank you for all your support, and I'll see you when this is over.
Stephen, do you know that voice?
Well, I thought I knew it was up to when the person edited One Love Jamaica. I was hazarding a guess that it was Dr. Ernest Hilaire. I was guessing that. That's my guess.
Philo?
Sounds like Chris Deering.
Dr. Ford?
Yes, yes. I know Philo is on the ball. He's good.
Yes, it's actually Chris Deering. He contracted coronavirus.
Like Chris Deering. It's Chris Deering.
Yeah, right. Very, very sad indeed. Very, very sad indeed. We're going to...
have to be careful.
Yeah, very, very sad. What we're going to do, though, we're going to spend the remaining, five or so minutes left on the show with a youngster that we're seeing on Zoom. Now, here was a situation, as I said at the top of the program, we really thought that perhaps the media should have captured this game. Cormorant Hunt up against St. Catharines, a second division game, ladies and gentlemen. But you know what? Let's look at the scores here. Cormorant Hunt 206-8. Dale Richards 144, 16 sixes, 6 fours, 120 runs in boundaries. Now, St. Catharines, you would have thought that game would have been a game won by Cormorant Hunt. But Philo Wallace, listen to this. St. Catharines 211-6. Michael Holder 119 from just 47 balls. Now that's interesting. But interestingly, in that game, a 13-year-old played for St. Catharines in his first match at the second division level. We've got it on the line with his father, and it's an absolute pleasure to say hello to young David Callender. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm good. I do.
Good. And you got your father next to you, David Hunt. We know him as Rubber Neck in St. Philip. Yes.
Old St. Catharines player.
Old St. Catharines player as well. All right. Now, young David Callender, how old are you? I said 13. Am I right? You're 13 years old?
That's right.
Okay. Where do you go to school?
Dayton Griffith. Dayton.
All right. And what part of St. Philip are you from?
Lidersville, St. Philip.
Lidersville, but that's pretty close to St. Catharines Club. And you were in your first match for St. Catharines? At the second division level?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. All right. But you also, and listen to this, he, in his first match at 13 years old, bowled 4 overs and got 5 wickets for 46 runs, including a hat trick. Isn't that wonderful for the young man? We thought we had to capture it on Mason and Guest. What a performance. By the way, one of the wickets he got was the wicket of Dale Richards. And I understand, David Callender, that Dale Richards shook your hand and he must have been very happy to have had you down there. How do you feel, youngster, about this wonderful performance?
Pardon me?
How do you feel? You feel good?
I feel good.
You feel good. All right. Right, right.
At first, I was a little bit intimidated.
But after you got your first wicket, then you got your second, then you got your third. 5 wickets, a 13-year-old, that's tremendous, isn't it?
Yes, please.
Okay. And you're playing for St. Catharines at the second division level, but you would have played for St. Catharines on the 13 as well. All right. Now, let's talk to Daddy. Daddy, you must be very happy with the performance of your son.
Hey, how you doing, Andrew? How you doing?
I'm good. You must be a very happy man with the performance of your son.
Very much so.
Did you say anything to him before the match? Did you tell him to get a hat trick and get 5 wickets as well?
Yeah, I tell him you're doing wonderful. You do a great job. Yeah, you get a couple of sticks, but that's T20. So... And he turned around and he performed good, he bowled well.
Right, tremendous. David, before you go, who's your favorite cricketer at the international level?
Virat Kohli.
Oh, you like Kohli? What do you like Virat Kohli?
Because it's all his bat and ball.
Okay. All right. And what do you bowl? Do you bowl what? I understand left arm spin like Derek Bishop?
Yes, please.
Okay, right. And you obviously want to play for the West Indies as well. You started well. You're Dighton Griffith. The same school, by the way, that Derek Bishop would have played for. And no doubt you're hoping to help the situation in terms of the second division St. Catharines. And you must be very happy to be playing with Derek Bishop as well. Are you?
Yes.
All right, great. All right, well, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. And Daddy, of course you...
Yeah, Andrew, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I have something to say to I was very pleased with Dale Richards. How he, well, he told him to hold a push through the arm ball and...
Okay, Dale spoke to him.
And that over, and then he turned around and he get him in the next over.
Yes. Yeah, he got him in the next over, yes. Yes, it must have been a quicker one, huh? You never know.
He had a lot of tactics from Derek Bishop, which is an old
So Derek would have helped him. And of course,
Give thanks to Dale, David, everybody. You know?
Right, wonderful. All right, well, David, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. This is David Callender, of course, Father David Hunt, and 13 years old. And, you know, in a match to see two hundreds, one from Dale Richards, one from Michael Holder, and also to pick up 5 wickets in your first match, that is a performance worthy of commendation. And I want to thank you and your dad for coming through and talking to us on Mason and Guest. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your evening. All right, thanks.
Yeah, he scored 100 on the 13 level too. He finished with up.
Oh, he scored 100 as well. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he got all this from his mother or from his dad, because you never made runs.
But you know he was playing for St. Catharines Barbados one thing, he was 11 years old.
Yes, I know he was playing for St. Catharines Barbados, and I'm sure that people like Dale Mason and Ulrich Batson and Matt Fingal will be quite happy with his performance.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your... Andrew. You must be a very proud dad. Thank you very much indeed.
You got to come Sunday, you know, and see me.
No, I'm coming. I'm coming on Sunday. I'll be there on Sunday. And of course, we'll have a drink on that. All right. Final words with you, Stephen Leslie. This must be a performance that would inspire everyone at the BCA.
I just want to encourage David. Congratulations. I realize that this is the first good performance of many that we hope that he has for 2020. And we want to hear his name on a consistent basis, showing that consistency that we want from our West Indian cricketers. And it's a really good feat to get 5 wickets in his first game. And I also want to conclude, Andrew, by saying it was very refreshing to see persons like Shane Dorridge and Craig Braffitt and Shane Mosley and Jamel Warrican coming up for their clubs after being in that extended bubble in the UK. And we hope that they will continue to play well, and Barbados' cricket at the end of the day will be beneficial from the presence of these players. And I want David to remember, keep up the good work. Mm-hmm. It's important that you be part of that next group of cricketers that come through at that national level for our country.
All right, thanks. Quick word, of course, in terms of the match. The Tridents won 53-9, and in response, the Patriots are now 18 without loss in 3 overs. So 153-9. But one stage the Tridents were really broken because they were 3 wickets down for some 9 runs, but they recovered and they've got to try to defend that score of 153 in response. Now the Patriots are 19 without loss. We want to thank you, Dr. Ford, for coming through and talking to us. Thanks to you, Stephen Leslie. We'll continue to update in relation to the BCA. Thanks to David. And David, thanks to you, fellow Wallace. Earlier on the show, we've had the CEO of Cricket West Indies, Johnny Grave, and of course the noted journalist, Fazir Mohammed. And we have to leave the last words with this youngster. The youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.